It all started falling apart late last night when Judas, with a band of soldiers, came for Jesus.
All we could think about was saving ourselves. Only Peter and John had the courage to stay with Jesus for a while. By the time dawn came, Peter was having an emotional breakdown, and John had run away.
The next thing we knew, about 9 this morning, Jesus was carrying his cross through the streets of Jerusalem. It was obvious he had been beaten, whipped mercilessly, mocked, and tortured. We hardly recognized him. By noon, he was hanging on a cross.
Some of us gathered at a distance to watch. We were silent, lost in our own thoughts. But no doubt, all of our thoughts were the same. The same shared memories. We remembered last evening in the garden before Judas showed up. We kept falling asleep.
And Jesus was praying, "My Father, if it's possible, take this cup of suffering from me, but not what I want, but what you want. With tears and in great distress, he prayed a second time and a third time.
But the thrust of his prayer turned from what might be possible to what might not be possible. "My Father, if it's not possible that this cup be taken away unless I drink it, then let it be what you want." And in the second and third prayers, he was preparing to die.
But why? Why was there no other way? Why did this good man, the best we have ever known, the best we have ever imagined, have to face torture and execution, as if he was some evil monster?
As the hours dragged on, from noon to nearly 3, we imagined many reasons. Some are political. The Pharisees were right to be concerned last Sunday when Jesus came marching into the Capitol. First, our little parade. The Romans, they would have called it a rebellious act or mob. It proclaimed Jesus as king. From there, he marched into the temple and called it a hideout for crooks, turning over tables and upsetting the religious economy. Only a fool would do things like these, without expecting consequences.
But Jesus was no fool.
No.
We thought about more spiritual reasons for this to happen. Jesus had told us again and again that God is different from our assumptions. We've assumed that God was righteous and pure in a way that makes God hate the unrighteous and impure. But Jesus had told us that God is pure love, so overflowing in goodness that God pours out compassion on the pure and impure alike. Mm-hmm. Not only has he told us of God's unbounded compassion, he has embodied it every day as we have walked this road with him.
Yeah.
He embodied it in the way he sat at the table with everyone. In the way he was never afraid to be called a friend of sinners. In the way he touched the untouchables and refused to condemn even the most notorious of sinners. He has embodied for us a very different vision of what God is like.
At dinner last night, when he knelt down and washed our feet, and later, when he called us his friends, what was that supposed to mean? He was trying to show us that God isn't a dictator, high in the sky, eager for us to cower at his feet. Was he inviting us to think of God as one who is down here with us, who stoops low and touches our feet as a servant would? He was telling us that God would rather cleanse us than condemn us. If that was the case last night, what could this horrible day be trying to show us? Could there be any meaning to this disaster playing out before us now?
And then we thought, if Jesus is showing us something so radical about God, what is he telling us about ourselves, about human beings and our social and religious institutions? What does it mean when our political leaders and our religious leaders come together to mock and torture and kill God's messenger, God's beloved child, God's best and brightest? How misguided can one nation be?
Is this the only way religions and governments maintain order? By threatening us with pain, shame, and death if we don't comply? And is this how they unify us? By turning us into a mob that comes together and it share hatred of the latest failure or loser, rebel, criminal, outcast, or prophet?
The Romans boast of their peace. And our priests, they boast of their holiness and justice. But today, it all looks like a fraud, a sham, and a con game. What kind of world have we made? What kind of people have we become?
1 minute, the crowds were flocking to Jesus, hoping for free bread and healing. The next minute, they were shouting, "Crucify him!" And we, his so-called disciples, we are no better. 1 minute, we were eating a meal with him, and he was calling us his friends. Now, we stand at a distance, unwilling to identify ourselves with him.
It's grown strangely dark now, in the middle of the afternoon. And in this darkness, in from the distance, we can hear Jesus. "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." Forgive them? Forgive us?
Our thoughts bring us again to the garden last night, when Jesus asked if there could be any other way. And now it seems so clear. There could be no other way to show us what God is truly like. God is not revealed in killing and in conquest, in violence and hate. God is revealed in this crucified man, giving of himself to the very last breath, giving and forgiving.
And there could be no other way to show us what we are truly like. If God is like this and we are like this, everything must change. Everything must change. Everything.